equals burn. The propaganda's win, stress feeding on my tension. My countrymen, they love their fiction. Words are now displayed with good intentions.
Welcome to 1 in 200, the media and politics podcast from Aotearoa. Kia ora, everybody. We're back with another week. The New Zealand government continues to go from weakness to weakness, to the extent that it's now getting pulled up with reasonable consistency by New Zealand media on the front page of their websites. That is how bad it is getting. Every public service is fucked. They can't even deliver food for children. All of this you would know and you would have predicted if you listened to 1 of 200, because we said this back before the election. We put this on the plate and we pushed it out to you and said, please eat. And many of you did, and I thank you for that. I'm joined by my co-hosts. Jenny, how are you doing?
Yeah, you know, it's bleak, but we're surviving.
Wonderful. Simone?
Hi, I bring nothing to the table.
Wonderful. Like, the plate's already full.
But I'm not last, which means I'm not the guest star. I'm just noticing this.
Well, you're a regular co-host, so I don't know. Treat that how you will. And guest star, Gigi, all the way from the United States of America. How's your constitutional crisis going?
Oh, it's going so good. To show that I'm American, I am in between periods of me talking, shoving French fries and chicken tenders into my pie hole.
It's so interesting that you're shoving pies in there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you know, thing I learned after traveling to New Zealand, y'all are much more about pies than we are.
That's right. That's one thing we're about.
We're about like a fruit pie or whatever the fuck a pumpkin counts as.
What does a pumpkin? A berry. I think it's a berry.
And occasionally a chicken pot.
Okay.
But other than that, pieless. The amount of pies in your country. You have more pies than people, it feels like.
It's actually true.
Yeah.
We probably do have more pies than people. Glad you got to experience
In every gas station, a row of pies.
Multiple rows.
Right there for the taking.
And so many sheep.
Yeah. No, not doing the sheep thing today.
If you are a sheep boy, you want to move to New Zealand.
Look.
Constitutional crisis, it's great. As someone that has various friends that work in various types of governments, some less ethical than others, cool.
I see
cool
it's
times
like,
here.
It's already getting a little bit of a narrative shift among the really savvy motherfuckers in the States. Like, this isn't a constitutional crisis. Don't be so silly.
Yeah,
it just seems fucking stupid.
The line right now is like, all of these people are calling it a constitutional crisis because they're being told to say that by like their, you know, they're telling every journalist that isn't a right wing sycophant to say constitutional crisis from the top, you know, George Soros or whoever.
White Urkel has released a bunch of 17-year-olds into the bureaucracy. I don't understand how this isn't a constitutional crisis.
Hey, they are 19 to 25, which means that they can still get HRT.
I like an important consideration that, I don't know, maybe some of these folks will take up one way or another. Yeah. We got a lot on the plate, even without Simone bringing anything to the table. Multiple plates. Many big meals. First up,
I bring a nothing vibe to the potluck that everyone gets annoyed by.
Just, panache. School lunches in Aotearoa. What a fucking nightmare. Is this something that finally sticks to David Seymour? And like, first up, I really fucking hate this kind of like Teflon argument. Like, oh, nothing sticks to this guy, blah, 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 blah. And it's true. It's because no one sticks anything to him. But he's been getting some serious flack for this.
Yeah, I mean, have you seen I assume if you're listening to this podcast, you've seen the photos of the food being circulated. I don't know if I would feed any of that to my cat. And she's a foster who has no standards. She was drinking bleach out of a tub the other day. And I don't think she would eat any of that stuff that's been served.
They're bleaching the dogs, they're bleaching the cats.
Like, that's where we're at the moment. And I think that I don't know how I feel about the pie and pita pit remedy, if that makes sense. Like, I think that the way it's covered has been almost like an own goal at this point. Like, I think saying that, like, covering it by ignoring the fact that, or focusing on something, well, pretty much everything other than the mechanical failure of the people contracted to provide the school lunches is a big mistake. Like, I think that there's a huge opportunity there for us to actually criticize the group who has been paid, what, two or three times the market value of a contract like this for the actual school food supplying and just hasn't delivered. And like having it as like a cool, oh, like pies are just like so much better. Or like, wow, we're at this point where like every kid loves a pie. I'm like, I don't give a shit about that. Like, can we have some journalism now about the actual like cost benefit analysis behind acquiring these school lunches and how much of a hole that is financially put into the government's like coffers at this point? Like, it's just so, I just hate it. It's like the sausage rolling of fucking Chris Hipkins all over again. You know,
Yeah, it's really
why are we focusing
frustrating.
on that?
And you know, this is something we talked about early on. And you have to wonder how much journalists like just string themselves out for this stuff, like just set themselves out to like be consistently failing because they all ran headlines like David Seymour saves the school lunch program and shit, right? After it was David Seymour who had like destroyed the school lunch program and he found somehow an extra $100 million to give to his mates at Compass Group.
Fell off a truck.
Yeah, well, look, it would be better at this point. And yeah, just wild stories like lunch is showing up 20 minutes before the home bell. There are like communities popping up for people to share like their school lunch horror stories and pictures of the school lunches. We've just had yesterday, it turns out that Compass Group was claiming that the food was some of the food was halal. The food for Muslim students was halal. And when asked, they said, "Oh, it's halal friendly," a term which doesn't really exist, and it's just like a complete abrogation of responsibility.
They like pour it into the trays facing Mecca. It's the slob.
It's amicable to halal.
Yeah, right.
Sure, it's halal.
Which has drawn a
Halal
huge
adjacent, right? The
ambivalent
food is not personally
halal
Islamophobic. That's what's going on.
it's just it's immediately drawn like huge castigation from the Muslim community here and from schools because you know this is a food requirement. It's absolutely obscene. And David Seymour was actually getting slammed. David Seymour was slammed by the media,
For once.
destroyed by RNZ for once because he's being such a cunt about it. The headline today on RNZ is Seymour hasn't done his homework. He's just relied on laziness, which is quoting from the Muslim community about Seymour's assumptions around how having a halal kitchen would work. Yeah, just like the most do-nothing motherfuckers in our government. And as we always knew, trying to cut costs and privatize these kind of public services to big international corporates was always going to end up with incredibly bad results for New Zealand children.
I'm now seeing
Yeah.
some pictures of some of this food, by the way. And wow, that's bad.
Yeah.
Well, you see, it's like jazz. It's about the candy you're not giving to babies.
Yeah. It's like jazz. It's about the pasta you can't see in the ball.
It's horrific. It is horrific. Yeah, I think like I probably wouldn't pitch it as a look, this is a waste of money. You know, that's part of the argument that they're trying to start seeding. They're trying to get us to approach us on their terms. I want to spend more money on feeding children. You know, like we should, like, this is the way that the right wing and the far right destroy public services is that they underfund and replace services with shitty alternatives so that people look elsewhere and say, look, the government can't even provide for us. Why do we have this in the first place? And then they pull all the funding.
But I want people to understand the structure of this and the way that it's always rolled out by the a government which is ruled by the other major party always sets the stage for this to be possible, right? So we have, for example, the privatization under the Key government and the selling of shares in state-owned enterprises would not have been possible if they weren't corporatized, if they were government departments. And so if it wasn't true that these were contracts to external companies, under the Labour government, to provide school lunches, National couldn't have just easily changed the contract to another company if there was the ability in-house within schools to produce this, and or we had some kind of community food sources in production, right? Then it wouldn't be possible to unpick that nearly so easily.
Yeah, this is you know, something PMAX, who's been on the podcast previously, has talked about as well. Like, you actually have to empower schools to be part of their communities and give them this resource. They want the kids they're teaching to be fed. You know, they're going to work with the local community to actually deliver these. Under the previous arrangement, when they were contracting to local providers, it was significantly better. But as you say, like, the problem is that they're contracting in the first place, that this is a private enterprise arrangement. That just allowed a straight switch. Like, they could have been protected. They could, like, there's something that the Labor government could have ensured wasn't able to be privatized in this way.
Well, in much the same way as the New Zealand economy is a housing market with some extras attached, the New Zealand government is essentially a vacuum cleaner machine, like the giant one in Spaceballs that sucks the atmosphere out of the planet, that just, like, funnels money from people's labor into private hands. That's all government does in this country, it seems.
It's foul. I think the one place where I'm willing to talk about, you know, the cost of the government, and, you know, just something which is just routinely dismissed by the majority of parliamentarians across the spectrum, and I mean particularly the centre and right wing parties, including Labour, is the cost in the future for having a whole bunch of children who aren't fed well, who are too hungry to learn, and have, like, health issues, education issues throughout their lives, like. There is a direct social good to feeding kids aside from just the, like, ethical and moral requirement for us to ensure that the children in this country are not hungry. Like, that should be really, really easy for people to grasp. And I think that's partly why the government is actually getting some flack for this for once.
Did you want to read out PMAX's contributions, like written contributions?
I think we've kind of covered it. Sorry, PMAX, we just stole all your stuff and said it was ours.
It in my costume's voice.
Oh, that's right.
Just to really fuck with people.
But I couldn't guarantee that it would actually be verbatim. Because once my costume takes over.
Oh, yeah, it's like you're possessed, you know?
Yeah. Horrible. I don't know, do we think, I guess get into prediction a little bit. Do we think that this is the kind of thing that will undermine the government and actually push their polling down? Or is this something like where the really nasty arguments, such as, oh, it's a parent's job to feed their kids, too bad for the kids, is going to still make ground?
I think there is a final point that's touched upon, which we haven't mentioned yet, which is just the flow and effects when you understand how connected all of this is, right? So, something that people do bring up, but I think hasn't been brought up that much in the reporting of this, is that when kids don't have food, they can't do what they're supposed to do and learn. Like, this is deleterious to the outcome of having a citizenry in the future that are able to engage in participating in a society and building and creating a society. And, you know, not to do the whole, like, they're hypocrites and they don't understand. They know this and they're deliberately doing this, right? But if you were to take at face value that National and ACT are so-called concerned about crime, this is how this sort of thing starts, is kids, like, crashing out of school, either because they have to go and support people or because they get caught up in the wrong crowd or because they just can't read because they're not educated. It is shocking, the literacy rates of prisoners in New Zealand. There is a strong correlation between people not being afforded an actual proper public education because of their background, because of the schools, because of the failures of government, and essentially being shoved as a social problem into the carceral state. Just like, we don't know what to do with you. You're being a nuisance, so go in a cage for the rest of your life.
DG, are you able to give us a quick glimpse of the future and the school-to-prison pipeline?
Well, I mean, in some ways, you're already here, right? Because Compass is this like company that is multinational, right? They operate in 45 countries. And these include America, where a subsidiary of them settled a lawsuit in 2015, 10 years ago, alleging that the meals had been delivered late, the number was insufficient, and the food was poor quality or spoiled. They got in trouble in the UK for similar stuff. So yeah, I mean, at least in terms of this, like, the only thing that I could say is maybe different here is, like, do y'all make kids directly pay for the food at schools?
Not yet.
What? 'Cause that's what we do.
Yeah, I've heard about lunch debt, which is actually one of the evilest things to exist.
Yeah. Yeah, if there is like a, you know, below a certain like household income amount, you do qualify for free or reduced lunch. You know, we got a means test, obviously. But yeah, like I used to either it was bring a lunch from home or pay some amount of money. Back when I was going, it wasn't very much, and like nominally, but you know, to families that are trying to make ends meet, $2 a day can be quite a lot, you know, over a month.
Bringing for the first time children's debtors prisons.
Children's debtors prisons?
But I mean, think about it with the structure of how these contracts work. Theoretically, in the future, we could have kids who are like not fed by Compass, then being funneled into prisons where the food is also not being provided by Compass.
Yeah, some of these comments do say that the food is like prison food. And it turns out, yeah, Compass does food for prisons and hospitals and other places where food is known to be great.
Bad. So there you have it, folks. This is the point of the spear by this government to make things a lot worse. And they know who they hired to do this. They know what this fucking group does. They know that they've had these issues previously. They know that they don't deliver on contracts. They know that they are essentially used to destroy people's faith in public services. Like, this is why you hire these cunts.
Yeah, but they were paying $8 a meal before. Can you imagine paying $8 for a meal?
Yes, and it was wonderful. One day we'll be there again.
It was like half a cookie in Auckland Central.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like one oat flat white.
You mentioned hospitals because Compass also supplies food for hospitals, including here in Aotearoa.
The co-voice, they're all the same, schools, hospitals, prisons.
Yeah, like, genuinely, though. Like, this is part of it, right? Like, let's make all of these things bad. So you go into private schools, you go into charters, right, which ACT is currently also trying to do. You go into private prisons with Serco, with food supplied by Compass, because they have lower recidivism rates, apparently, which is one of the latest stats that's just like being pushed into the media. And then you go into private hospitals because if you try and go on the public waiting list, you die before you can get surgery. This is the intent of these kind of policies, is to create a system so broken that it's the public and the electorate themselves that are voting for the privatization. We've seen this happen in every fucking country in the world, but particularly the United States. You know, we've given examples of this.
I'm doing jazz hands.
It's like jazz.
My mom might die within the year because of this.
Yeah, it's ludicrous.
She voted for it.
It's horrific. But yeah, in the health sector at the moment, we just lost a third health leader in as many weeks to resignation. I don't know who's going to be the new Director General of Health just yet. What a fantastic thing to happen as soon as Simeon Brown moves into the Minister of Health role.
Strong and stable, Kyle.
Just like the most, this is probably one of the most, it might be the most unstable government while I've been alive, in terms of like the number of roles and the amount of knowledge being rapidly lost alongside a very clear but unreported on privatization strategy. Like, it's actually absurd. I don't even know how you would solve for it now. Like, we need this government out like as soon as possible, and we need Labor to say we're just going to make up money. We're going to create money. We've got a magic money tree. We found one. We found a magic money tree. It's because the state can create money out of thin air. Like that's how the government works. And we're going to pay for all this stuff. We're gonna make the health sector good again. We're gonna make education sector good again. Yeah, it's looking bad on the health front. How's a glimpse into the future, Gigi? What's private healthcare like in the United States?
You remember how I said my mom might die within the year? So here's that situation, right? Is in America, right? Our healthcare is tied largely to our jobs. My mom recently lost her job. This means that she's lost her healthcare unless she can pay for like continuing healthcare. She believes that she does not qualify for Medicare. Well, she doesn't qualify for Medicare because she's not old enough. She believes she doesn't qualify for Medicaid yet, at least. However, to continue your health insurance through COBRA, if y'all aren't familiar with COBRA, I forget what the acronym is actually, but basically it's like after you get terminated, that can leave you without your health insurance. That sucks. So they do offer you a chance to like continue on your health insurance plan if you pay the full cost of the premium. But you've also just lost your job. Therein is the rub, where she's trying to claim unemployment, has not gotten a determination on unemployment yet, therefore has not gotten paid. If you are not getting paid, how do you pay for COBRA? Also, if you're not getting paid, like, she owns the house, right? She owns her house, but like, how do you pay for food? How do you pay for rent? How do you pay for anything, right? Because you have no income coming in, they just assume that you're on savings, right? And like for people in her age bracket, that's kind of true. There are some savings there. They go quick, but there are savings. But for people, say in my age bracket, largely you're fucked. Like, because the lower bound for Medicaid in the United States is actually quite low. Like I work part time. I'm not doing great, but I'm doing okay. For a while I was in a situation where that I would call van poor, in that I was paying so much to have a car, which is a necessity, right? That I could not really afford rent. So, and that's a situation that a lot of people find themselves in. So yeah, if I lost my job, I would just be shit out of luck. But also, I make like a good 5,000 or so more per year than what the cutoff for Medicaid is in my state. And we have a relatively good cutoff,
Fuck me.
like relative to median income, you know what I mean?
What's like wild to me is so many people have heard like the United States is such a cautionary tale about privatized healthcare, right?
Yeah, it sucks. It's one of the most evil things that people
Yeah.
have ever done, I think.
It's such a strong narrative. Like everyone knows about it. And yet here and I guess in other places where they're doing similarly, like in the UK with the NHS where they're trying to privatize. Or like start setting it up to do that. It's just like this weird exceptionalism, particularly among political leaders and the media class reporting on them, where they're like, oh no, but I don't think they really want to privatize. They wouldn't dare to do that. Like, do you want to be like the United States? I don't think they want to. No, they do. They do want to. This is what they want to do. They want to kill poor people. They want them to die.
People refuse ambulances here. Like, the people that listen to this podcast are probably aware, but people refuse ambulances here all the time because if you take an ambulance to a hospital, you get charged hundreds, if not thousands, of dollars.
And there you have it, folks. So, Ghost of Christmas Future.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the one. That's
Great.
like, it's very clear the tracks we are on and what the government's trying to do to us, right?
And also, because of the way that privatized healthcare is, there's a lot of places that take federal money, because they're like, the places sort of consolidate. Like I get my primary care physician is at a hospital that's a part of this like large network in the state, right? And this large network gets federal money, which means that they are subject to things like, say, attempts at banning care for transgender youth. Woo!
I think we're already heading in that direction as well, right? We've got a whole bunch of private providers who already get government funding. And this is what you're saying, Simone, about it just being a big vacuum that sucks up everyone's wealth and funnels it towards private enterprise.
It's privatized, but it also relies on government money.
No, exactly.
We could just be paying for it.
Yeah.
The privatization really shows the lie of the idea of a kind of market-centered economy, because ultimately it is just a way of funneling public money into private hands, right? People call it, you know, stripping out the copper wiring and all of that. But you can have sort of continuous flows of money that are value produced by ordinary people's labor that just gets kind of funneled into private hands, and they sort of get stolen from twice in that way, because they have to pay for the service then, as well as, you know, being taxed toward that, right? So that's sort of one of the, I think, lies of neoliberalism, is the idea that it is a rolling back of the state, but it's not. It's rolling back of state support of poor people, or of working people, or of anybody who is a kind of an underfoot, undesirable, or an indigent person, anybody who isn't in the ruling class, ultimately, right? As that circle of protection shrinks smaller and smaller. But the state doesn't shrink at all. It combines its tentacles with private enterprise and funnels through it. And in that sense, there is very little distinction. It's almost a spectrum, if you might think of it that way, between the neoliberal project and the way that a fascist government operates. So we can look at, you know, some of the most famous examples, you know, Europe in the early to mid 20th century, 30s and 40s, as an example of how privatization is a critical part of the way that fascism has existed in the real world, you know, actually existing fascism. So when people discuss what contemporary liberalism means, or claim that, you know, leftists are in some way thwarting the ability of, you know, centrists and neoliberals to sort of protect against the rising tide of the far right, it's quite the opposite, in fact, that neoliberals are just fascists who don't know it yet. They haven't properly committed, because perhaps they're a little squeamish about the other methods of control and, you know, in the periphery being turned inward toward the metropole. But they'll become acclimatized to it. Don't worry. And every journalist now who hasn't taken some kind of objective or factual-based stance against what this government is currently doing is quite happy to be warmed up as a frog in the pot. They'll probably help to turn the dial as well, which is what they're doing. So I never fear. Like, if you're a journalist at the moment, and you shouldn't say if you're a journalist, sorry, if you're a reporter, I don't know if New Zealand has any journalists. If you're a reporter right now, or you do, like, I don't know, top 10 articles for New Zealand Herald or some BuzzFeed nonsense or whatever it is, whatever it is that you people think that you're doing instead of asking questions, if you're doing that right now and you are currently part of the media environment as it exists, as we can look at the snapshot right now, you will be a fascist in 5 years or 10. Let's give it a little more time.
Insane prediction.
You'll be okay with it. You are okay with it. You're already okay with it. Just accept yourself.
It's like the weirdest hypno session ever.
No.
We're actually trying to do it the other way around.
If you are in the media right now,
you might be a Nazi.
No, I appreciate you trying to snap people out of it with some hard truths, Simone. But let's talk about, you know, that kind of shift. And, you know, especially while we have you here on the podcast, Gigi, because shit is getting insane over there for trans healthcare. And we're just starting to see, like, the start of that try to be forced into the New Zealand discourse as well. Yesterday, on the last couple of days, a letter was sent to a whole bunch of providers, basically threatening them with future lawsuits for providing trans healthcare in the present. Like really, really nasty stuff from everyone's most hated New Zealand lawyer, Stephen Franks. But yeah, really trying to put that kind of like chill to really scare New Zealand health professionals into not providing necessary healthcare to trans people.
Yeah, I mean, you definitely have that happening here as well, right? Because like the executive orders go out and there have been judges ruling stays on various orders, right? Which Elon Musk is extremely upset about. For the record, every single one of them seems to be now just like appalled that the judicial branch of our government can exercise any power, so that's great. But yeah, so like there are blocks for these orders coming out, but there are hospitals all around the country that have already stopped providing care, right? Preemptive, or what's the word? Like obeying in advance or complying in advance, something like that. Which here also, like the care bans are related to like government health insurance, like trying to get it through like the military health service, TRICARE, and government like employees and Medicaid as well. Getting like language, like extremely turf language, like female genital mutilation in referring to gender affirming care, stuff like that. Yeah, shit is popping off over here. Because like also while there are like stays being put on some of these executive orders, with other orders, we have seen that the executive just is not honoring those and just moving forward as, as planned, like basically just trying to pretend that the courts don't exist. And it doesn't seem like anyone actually wants to call them on it here. So,
Yeah, I
ooh.
saw that they were thinking of cutting the entirety of Medicaid.
Yeah, so the Medicaid thing is they are planning to cut, I think it was like 870 billion was the number. It was an extremely high number. It was the amount that is spent on Medicaid in a year. In fairness, it is cutting that amount over 10 years,
Okay.
but that's still fucking insane, right? To cut the Medicaid but or to cut the Medicaid budget by like minimum 10% per year, right, is going to kill people.
In
It's just
effect,
going to kill people. There's no other way to say it, because like they, they talk about how there's like all sorts of Medicaid fraud going on, but like I haven't really. The thing that they started talking about was like for Medicaid and other things was like payments being sent overseas fraudulently to, say, countries such as New Zealand, which seems to be some like crazy shit they don't have any proof for. This is also the country that is saying, like, maybe we don't have as much debt as people say we do. Maybe there's just like fraudulent debt, like we're trying to. There can only be so many moments where you go, like, damn, this is the point where, like, someone in the deep state, quote unquote, someone in a three-letter agency has to do something about this, right? This is fucking up the game.
So, were you going to cut in before?
What I was going to say was, it is greater than 10%. It compounds because even a freeze is effectively a cut, both with inflation, but also with a growing population, which requires greater healthcare needs. So that's going to increase over time, much greater. And of course, there's always possibility for that sort of policy, since 10 years is an eternity in policy years in the Anglophone world, except for Australia, I think. Then it is more than that, right?
What's the I guess like a quick clarification. What's driving the difference between the institutions that are complying in advance on some of this stuff, and the ones that are seeking judicial stays. Like, what's happening there that's leading those services in different directions? And what, I guess, opportunities does that mean that there are for pushing back on this?
Trying to find in like the youth care ban, I'm trying to find information about the plaintiffs. The ACLU is or a staff attorney for the ACLU is part of the representation, but I can't. Okay, so the plaintiffs there are like not hospitals, they're people who would be getting that care as
Right.
part of it. And I mean, that's probably just like how that stuff has to work in the States. But like, yeah, the places that are complying in advance are places, large institutions. You know, there's like university hospitals, children's hospitals, stuff like that, that they make a decision based on the liability, I guess, is probably the main thing. They like preemptively stop it so that they don't leave themselves open to any sort of lawsuit in the future if someone wanted to come and try to like sue them for having provided
Yeah, right.
gender affirming care to somebody after the executive order, which it should go to say again, for some reason includes 18-year-olds who are legally adults in the United States. Like the only things you can't do at that point are drink alcohol and rent a car.
Well, you can't gamble, though, right?
Yeah, I think gambling as well, probably. That would make sense.
That does speak directly to kind of what's happening here, then, in terms of starting to produce those threats towards healthcare providers, right? To try and get
Because
that.
it never, because they talk about children, but it never stops at children, right? The Florida Don't Say Gay bill was initially supposed to be only for like elementary school, right? Like
Yeah.
below sixth grade or whatever. And then it quickly expanded to the entirety of the
Yeah.
schooling system,
As
basically,
everyone's
right?
predicted that this would it would happen this way, right? Like they're using children as a wedge. It's in completely bad faith, and it's about control and domination.
They use children as a wedge because people like get squishy about it, right? People that aren't trans largely, and even some that are, get squishy about the idea of letting a child transition, right? And on some level, it's because this is like a question of the bodily autonomy of a child, right? And you would say that the conservative project, that the fascist project relies on a child being their parents' property,
Yeah, this is a
right?
really key fact, right? This is a really key way around which this is operating. We've talked about this in previous podcasts as well.
It relies on children being parents' property. It relies on, for a lot of these people, like evangelical Christians or Catholics in quotes, who are really just evangelicals that want to say that they're some older thing. You have like this idea of like it's not natural, right? That's a thing that comes up for these people too. And this is a thing that like liberals are sort of amenable to, right? Because you're giving children these medical treatments and they think like, oh, well, I was a dumbass at 14. I couldn't even possibly know. When there's a lot, if a child with the way social stigma has been, it was not quite like this for a little bit, but for a long time before and right now, it's like if a child is telling their parents that they're trans, they have a pretty good idea usually. It cannot be stated enough that of people that make it to treatment, the regret rates are extremely low. Astoundingly low. In any other sort of medical treatment, this would be considered a miracle low. And honestly, if you ask me, hot take, this is probably a sign that it is too gate kept because you have to jump through so many hoops to get to it, especially as a child. The mum, but they find a few people who detransition, some of whom, they want to detransition, and that's fine. That happens. But then they get sucked up into this right-wing sphere where they go and they tell their story, and they point the hosts on Fox or wherever, point at like the hospitals and the governments and everyone that you should be mad at for having done this like incredible injustice to a kid.
Yeah.
Is how they frame it, right? But like, I knew when I was 12.
I think this those kind of attacks and that kind of framing as well.
Those are the two issues that people get squishy about are kids and sports.
That's just what's being targeted and pushed, right?
Yeah, that's part of it.
Yeah.
But like, there is this sort of like, it's a correctly assessed weak point on the side of the right, right? Because people generally, like, even a lot of trans people, I think, on the sports messaging, and like, I'm not necessarily like immune from this, is like, you know, the idea of having pushed that sex and gender are different is a thing that I've seen people talk about a lot as like having somehow indirectly caused this by not necessarily adequately explaining to people that sex is changeable, right? This isn't a thing that Republicans think, and I'm not sure that it's a thing that conservatives will ever believe or accept, right? But for people that are allies, there's like this idea of sex and gender are different, but there's not really like enough of a set, there wasn't really enough of a message of like, you can change both of these,
yeah,
right? I've been on hormones for 2.5 years now, and like, my body just does estrogen, you know, or it's just like, all right, we're doing estrogen now, so it does like all these changes, and there have been a variety of changes that I've experienced in that time, and you know, there's more and more all the time, right? Transition's a process, you know, but like, people don't view this as having changed your sex. A lot of people, even allies, view sex as this immutable thing, yeah, that you're born with, and then your gender can be different from that.
Yeah, and it's with intent that immutability is like pushed, yeah, as a thing. Like, it's also fascist thinking, and I think like,
yeah,
people have to be very clear about the other groups of ideas that are being pushed alongside the anti-trans rhetoric, right? By the right wing and the far right. Like, it's no mistake that great replacement theory started getting talked about alongside it. And, you know, like, in particular, replacement of Westerners or like white children. You know, these are key points in fascist white supremacy.
And it's no coincidence that, like, if you remember the LGB Alliance, this is terminology that the United States government is adopting quite well and quite totally, right? LGB, dropping the T from,
yeah,
the acronym entirely, right? And this is a thing that was born out of the British right wing in the same building as a bunch of other British right wing think tanks, right? The LGB Alliance.
Yeah, yeah. It's very clear how coordinated it is, right?
That language is now on the State Department website. It's now LGB travelers instead of LGBT travelers. It's on the Parks Department website as of yesterday. The text for the Stonewall memorial has been changed to remove a lot of mentions of transgender people. Not all, weirdly, but it results in sentences like, sorry, I should have pulled this up before. You know, a little funny moment of showing Sylvia Rivera, New York City, 1969, saying, at a young age, Sylvia began fighting for gay and rights while also helping. They accidentally a word.
I mean, you have to find some humor in the cosmic horror of it all, right? But I
Yes,
think,
they actually, they purposefully a word, but they accidentally didn't fix the sentence.
it's. I think just like as we wrap this up, there's one thing that liberals in particular need to be really clear about is that a lot of this looks similar to the performative stuff that liberals do, right? But we cannot make that mistake in assessing what it actually is. Like, there is a performance to this, but there are also very direct outcomes that are trying to be enacted in a way that liberals do not do, right? Liberals are happy to slap like a rainbow on something and say job done. Like, they're not looking for a further outcome there, really, when it gets down to it. And I think there are a lot of people at the moment who are seeing what the far right is doing with like, oh, it's just a word. Like, they're just removing a thing. It's just theater. It is not theater. They are not liberals. They are not like you.
Trans women draw particular attention and ire. And the trans conversation is often centered around trans women for the reason that the ideology at play is one that you can see, again, drawing back to the historical example with which people are most familiar, Nazi Germany. You look at the construction of Kinderkirche Kuche, right? Like women church kitchen, sorry, children church kitchen is what women are supposed to do. This idea that of infiltration, that women need to be protected, that this is this idea of, chivalry. This is the way that it's presented, right? Our beautiful blonde white women are being attacked by men in disguise. What's underlying that, other than the sense of women as property and women as reproduction, social reproduction machines and reproduction factories, literally, is that trans women are men who are traitors, right? There is nothing more despicable than somebody who shows that masculinity can be thrown off, right? Or opt out of in some way from their point of view. Because if you are born as the superior being, but you're, quote unquote, choosing to be a lesser being, then you are, in some sense, a very vile traitor. That's why they draw attention. But I think that we will begin to see an increasing amount of ire drawn towards trans men for being women who are eschewing their responsibility as baby factories, which is what you've noted, Gigi, talking about genital mutilation, this sort of thing, right? Is this idea that a, quote unquote, biological woman's reproductive system, primary sex characteristics belong to the family, to the state, and to the fascist project. That's the property relationship that's being constructed here. And I think something to note is that all the way back in the 90s, there was an observation in Butler's work, Gender Trouble, that sex itself is socially constructed. There is often this kind of lies to children thing that we say, or has been said in the past, like, for example, the octet rule in chemistry, that, an electron shell has eight electrons in it, et cetera, as a sort of thing you tell when you are introducing somebody to a concept. This idea of gender and sex. Sex is immutable, gender is separate from it, gender is something you change. And this leads to allies, quote unquote, or cis people who are supposed to be sympathetic, having an understanding that being a trans person and accepting, quote unquote, their identity is being nice about them playing pretend. When in reality, Butler notes that sex itself is socially constructed. There are a series of real observable biological characteristics that exist within a bimodal distribution, which we group together and categorize as being sex, right? And we have ways of reading that, and the ways of reading that, and the semiotics of that, the signs that point to our categorization, our neat little binary of sex characteristics, is gender. That's something which is performative, not meaning it's a performance, but that as it is done, it is created, right? But unless we understand that sex itself and our conception of it is also socially constructed, something which we can understand historically, then we won't really understand what is at play here. And I think that it is incumbent upon cis people to have some more education than the very simple lies to children level, which they have previously understood. Because if your understanding of transness is, I need to be nice to my coworker who is playing pretend by dressing up in heels in the workplace, you really need to understand that that is so easily rolled back because it leaves itself open to the arguments of the right. Primarily, that why ought I be nice to people isn't their danger to my children of greater weight than their playing pretend and being nice to them. And if that's the calculus which exists in your mind, of course you have to concede to the right wing. But that's only because you've constructed a false idea in your head about what transness is, about what's at stake here in respect of not only trans people, but everybody else in an unfolding Holocaust.
Yeah, and this is why,
The difference between that sort of like the like being nice to my coworker or acquaintance or friend or whoever that's playing pretend and
his pronouns are
the
she,
right wing
her.
position. The difference between that and the right wing position that say my parents have is the being nice about it part.
And they're
Otherwise,
increasingly going into a
they
world
view
where
you as
being nice is going to be
fundamentally
an
the
affordance
same
that we
thing.
can't have.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry, I talked over you.
No, it's okay. I talked over you. But yeah,
And this
they
is.
view it as fundamentally the same thing. So.
Yeah. And this is why the way that the liberals, why the way liberals treat identity politics has been so fucking destructive. And it's been so easily picked apart, and so easily flipped, into this. We're using the words culture war, kind of framing, and I'm commenting on it as a cultural discourse, not buying into the fact that there is one. Just to be clear, Simone, who is wagging her finger at me, is because to them it is. It's just a set of words and claims, more than anything else that can be discarded very easily, in order to make electoral gains. And that's why they've been uniquely unable effectively push back on the rise of the far right in these spaces. It's disgusting, and they need to get better at it.
To draw an explicit trajectory, in the same way that the Luxon government has manufactured a recession, there will continue to be manufactured crises in kind of mirror parallel with the actual polycrisis that's caused by climate change and capitalism as its existence continues to be untenable and its contradictions unravel itself, right? But the creation of these false crises will compound. And in that situation, in the sense that society will become a kind of wartime economy, wartime society, sorry, if we can think of that, niceness will be seen as an affordance, which is a luxury. And if that is the case, then if your politics are based on, as Ardern loved to say, kindness, then that's going to go out the window. And you'll find that your ideology, as it existed or as you didn't believe it to exist, was sand being swept away in the tide. And when that is the case, you either have to find an actual foundation for it, or you realize that you're among the sea of people who are complicit in this and will participate in its construction and in the carrying out of the horrors to come, the barbarism.
And that's all we have time for this morning, folks. Good place to leave it, Simone.
Always a
Thank you for
positive
that.
note, right?
No, it's a positive note because it gives you some direction. Like, look, there are, if we don't know what the environment we are in politically is, then what can we do about it? You need an analysis. You need a geography. You need a topography of the political environment so you can effectively wage a campaign against it, because otherwise you get, what happened to Labour in 2023 or to the Democrats, right? And the election just gone in the United States. Yeah. All right. Hey, thank you so much for joining us, everybody. Thank you for joining us all the way from the United States, Gigi.
Thank you for having me.
And thank you as well for joining us all the way from Auckland, Simone.
We're not gonna dox you,
That
but
dogs me.
we won't dox you, but you know.
I like that I'm leaving. I'm coming to Auckland at the same time that Mitch is leaving it because Mitch just could not stand to be around me during all the cuts that I force on this podcast.
And PMAX also moving to where you were previously located.
That's right, PMAX.
But we
What
gotta keep coverage. We gotta keep coverage. And thank you as
your
well.
watch is Hamilton correspondent is
The
ending
one of
soon.
200 5G network expands.
5G network. No, 1 of 200 SpaceX network expands.
Oh,
I
I hate
wanted it to be
that.
5G because I want us to note that
Starlink.
we're causing what does 5G cause again? Autism in your children? What are we causing?
Probably zombies or something.
I think it's
That's terrible.
autism
I think all the
or
children really have the
gayness
autism.
or liberalism or
They all
something.
sound the same to me. Those are all
Liberalism,
the same word.
gender, mind
So
disease.
long as I'm undiagnosed, I don't have the pass to say any of that.
And thank you as well, Ginny, for joining us again.
All right, I just hang out. That's great.
You're on Discord the whole time typing to people.
Look, this is part of the 1 of 205G
Looking at your
network.
K-pop boys.
Look, important work being done, doing outreach. That's been
Yeah.
another episode of 1 of 200. Thanks so much to our audience for joining us. We'll be back next week with more. So stay tuned. Give us money. Patron in the summary. Share this with someone. If you want to know what's actually happening and you want to have a good prediction and analysis of Western liberal politics, particularly in Aotearoa, listen to us. Tell people they can find us, and also understand the world that they're having to interact with. We'll catch you next time.
If artifices are then I'm living a pointless life, but learning all your lessons from your politics is no distinction. The words upon now is paid with good intentions. And I'll admit that I'm at a loss for what to say when they quote this as a cost we ought to stay. Cause I live amongst the people every day. This vindictive, forgetful fucking rain. It feels like we're on the road to hell.